The Guardian. Thanks for tuning in to this week's Tech Weekly podcast. And speaking of tuning in, on the show this week...
If you're sitting at your desk next to your boss and you're watching YouTube videos, your boss is like, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing today? But if you, you know, are sitting there with your headphones on and you're listening to a podcast or you're listening to music, you're actually, that's helping you focus.
Kristen George from the audio app TuneIn tells me about their new live event initiative and why they're fast becoming the portal to the world's radio stations. Also,
I think a startup is more of a frame of mind than a size of business. I still want us to stay scrappy and agile and entrepreneurial, and also to throw great parties, which I think startups do.
And indeed, Moshi Monsters do throw good parties, where I met founder and CEO Michael Acton-Smith to discuss how this small startup is turning into a monster games maker. Also, we'll have a tech news roundup to hear about Apple's 50 billionth apps download and BlackBerry Messenger, which is breaking out and will be on an Android or iPhone near you soon. This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian. TuneIn is billed as the world's radio set. It's a comprehensive aggregator of thousands of live and on-demand feeds that's proved itself to be a big player in the US and is winning users in Europe and the UK. This week, TuneIn released news of two new initiatives: their live music festival coverage, kicking off with Jazz Fest in New Orleans, and their deals as an in-car audio provider for several of the top car manufacturers in the States. To find out more, I spoke down the line to TuneIn's Kristen George and first asked her to sum up TuneIn's unique selling points.
So we have 70,000 stations that already exist from around the world, and millions of programs. But we've recently looked into how we can make the world of live events listenable from around the world. So a perfect example of this is Jazz Fest, New Orleans. There are many people who want to go to Jazz Fest but don't have the opportunity. So what we want to do is light that up on TuneIn, make it visible to all of our listeners, and allow people to feel like they are there in Jazz Fest, even if they can't be in New Orleans.
It's a very competitive space. Obviously, iTunes dominates the digital music market, and there's an increasing bunch of other services that give you podcasts and music to listen to on the go. So what do you do that's different? Why are you special?
The way that I would describe the space really is that you have iTunes, and this is all about, you know, your traditional CD player. So it's about you collecting the music that you love, you know, really leaning forward, putting together a list of all the things you already know. Then there's sort of the programmatic radio space, which I would describe as sort of a CD player on shuffle. And then there's TuneIn, and what we do is we bring together all of these human-curated radio stations that in many cases have live events that are not just music. So sure, I'd love to hear Adele in studio or Jazz Fest live, but we also have things like sporting events. So a popular one in the UK really is Premier League, and that's something that TuneIn allows you to listen to. So we like to think of ourselves in this space as live human-curated radio, as well as, you know, on-demand human-curated podcasts and live events from all over the world.
So if you have 2 million programs, are you aggregating and kind of scraping this content from all over the web, or do you do a more formal kind of partnership arrangement where you license content?
Right. So our goal is to allow every person in the world to be able to listen to every piece of audio content. And so for us, as we dive into that space, there are some relationships that are much easier to get a ton of content, you know, through an API. So a good example of this is ESPN. And there are some people that don't have the technical capacity to build APIs. So in that case, what we do is allow them to come to our site, enter in all their information, control their brand, put in descriptions, and get their podcasts up on TuneIn. One of the great things that we offer for these content creators is just a distribution channel. We're on over 200 connected devices, so these are distribution channels that the average podcaster wouldn't be able to get on by themselves. A great example is, you know, BMW or Ford or Tesla. As a podcaster, you're not going to be able to go to, you know, Ford and say, hey, I want to get in to your vehicle. But through TuneIn, you know, you do an hour worth of work, an hour later it's live on 200 different devices, and you can access this whole slew of new listeners because we have so many listeners in one place.
Well, we'll come back to the cars thing in a minute, because that's a fascinating growth area for audio. But how do audio producers, how do these publishers make money? So whether you're, I don't know, a massive international media brand, or whether you're a tiny kind of producer making podcasts in your bedroom, how do you make money through TuneIn?
Yeah, so I think there's a simple answer now, which is TuneIn doesn't do any streaming ourselves. What we do is we distribute the content creator stream. So any content creator can put ads in their stream, similar to, you know, how they do on the radio today, and we don't touch any of that. So what we do is we just give them a new audience, more listeners, that gives them an opportunity to, you know, garner higher CPMs because they have a bigger audience.
Just looking ahead to the future, we know how big mobile is now and how important that is to just about every business that's in the technology space. What does this mean for audio? As if we look forward to, say, voice input and voice recognition, it would almost seem to imply that mobile phones wouldn't need to have a screen. They could be entirely audio. So this could be massively significant for your business, couldn't it?
Absolutely. There are a lot of reasons why I'm really passionate about the audio space. The first is it gives people a chance, people who can't see, a chance to have a medium. So we have a very, very strong blind community that actually listens to TuneIn, and TuneIn is the only source of really news and, you know, connection to the world that this community has access to. So I feel really strong about audio for that reason. I also feel strong about audio because you can listen while you're doing other things. If you're sitting at your desk next to your boss and you're watching YouTube videos, your boss is like, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing today?
So you're encouraging people to skive off work by using audio, is that? Surely not.
Yeah. But if you, you know, are sitting there with your headphones on and you're listening to a podcast or you're listening to music, you're actually, that's helping you focus, and you can do that, you know, you can listen while you're cooking, while you're working out, which is my favorite listening time, while you're driving. And so listening is just a very powerful thing. So yes, to get into sort of voice recognition, I think it becomes really powerful specifically in the car or while you're doing other things, because you don't have the opportunity to look at the screen. We have this concept of, on our Android apps and iPhone apps, of car mode. And on Android, it ties into Google Voice Search. So you can say something like, listen to Adele, and we can find a radio station somewhere in the world that's playing Adele right now, and then it just automatically tunes.
I'm getting that you're an Adele fan.
I am an Adele fan.
No, but there you go. So you've actually done deals, haven't you, with Tesla and Ford and BMW and people. So tell us a little bit more about the car experience particularly. There's a lot of technologists getting really excited about the potential here.
Tons of technology. I would say that nobody, there isn't a standard today. So nobody's quite figured it out. It's still really early. So our partners, Mercedes, GM, BMW, Ford, Tesla, these all have very different implementations. Ford's really centers around voice control. So it has a two-line display, and, you know, it's all about this sync technology. So for TuneIn, you go in and you say, listen to Budapest, and all of a sudden you're listening to the radio dial from Budapest. Or you can say, listen to Hawaiian music, and all of a sudden you're, you know, brought to a luau. So I really like that implementation because it anchors so much on voice. And then there's the Tesla implementation, which maybe is my favorite because you have a 13-inch display inside of a car, and you can just browse the entire directory of the world's radio right there inside of your vehicle. And they have a 3G connection with the car, so you don't have to connect your mobile device and get everything sort of hooked up. It's just automatic. So it's sort of the gauntlet, and that those are the sort of two ranges, I would say.
You would expect Tesla to be ahead of the game as well. I think I read that they've just sold 4,700 of those amazing top-end vehicles, which is very exciting. So what can we expect next from TuneIn? What's top of your to-do list?
Yeah, so if you go back to, you know, where we find the most value that we can offer for our listeners, it's really around that live event space. So, you know, you saw the beginning of that with Jazz Fest. I think what we want to do is really take these 70,000 stations, go in, figure out when they're having really cool live events, you know, with really centered around the humans that are sitting there and talking and interviewing and playing on those stations. And we want to surface all of those to users. And we're spending a ton of time working through user profiles. So what we're trying to figure out is, based on your listening history, what are the live events that are happening somewhere in the world that we can recommend to you so that you don't have to do any work when you come to TuneIn. We can just surface awesome content in that moment and show you what's most interesting in the world right now.
And how much would our listeners need to pay for one of your apps?
Oh, so TuneIn as a service is completely free. So we're ad supported, and we are working really hard to do everything we can to help content creators gain distribution and make money.
Excellent. Okay, Kristen, thanks very much for your time. If you'd like to find out a bit more about TuneIn, you can go to TuneIn.com. But thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And now it's time for a tech news roundup with Jason Phipps.
Amazon.com's customers can now use Amazon Coins to buy apps and games from the online retailer after it launched its own digital currency. All Kindle Fire owners in America were given 500 free Amazon Coins worth $5 or £3 sterling to mark the launch this week. The virtual currency, emblazoned with a woman drawing a bow, is presently only available for US customers. Each Amazon coin is worth around 1 US cent, with bulk purchases getting a discount of up to 10%. However, taxes are still payable on items bought with the coins, making their usefulness questionable. Amazon said that the new currency was, quote, an easy way to purchase apps and in-app items for customers, and, quote, another opportunity to drive traffic, downloads, and increase monetization for its developers. Amazon coins join a range of virtual currencies offered by larger sites, including Microsoft's points for its Xbox Live marketplace and Facebook credits. It was announced this week that BlackBerry is making its Messenger, BBM, available on Apple's iPhone and iPad and Google's Android platforms from this summer, abandoning the platform exclusivity that had for years been a crucial tool in attracting and retaining users. Announcing the move at the company's developer conference, software vice president Andrew Bocking said, quote, "The time is definitely right for BBM to become a multi-platform mobile service." Chief Executive Thorsten Hines called the move a statement of confidence. BlackBerry says that BBM has more than 60 million monthly active users, with more than 51 million using BBM for an average of 90 minutes per day. Its customers collectively send and receive more than 10 billion messages daily. The free app will be available once approved for Apple's iOS 6 software and for Android devices on the Android 4.0 or higher. This week, Google squared off with its arch rival Apple, announcing the launch of a subscription music streaming service while simultaneously mounting a threat to other providers such as Spotify. The music service, catchily titled Google Play Music All Access, was unveiled at Google I.O., the tech giant's annual developer conference in San Francisco, where delegates also heard about significant updates to its search and mapping services. In the US, All Access will cost $9.99 a month after a 30-day free trial. There was no immediate announcement of pricing in other territories. Google has signed licensing deals with music companies including Sony, Universal, and Warner, and so millions of songs will be available for the new service. And finally this week, the app industry hit a very big number indeed. Nobody knows which was the first app to be downloaded from Apple's iPhone App Store on the 11th of July 2008, but the total is expected to pass 50 billion this week, marking a huge new business created by the explosive spread of smartphones over the past 5 years. The lucky iTunes customer who downloads the 50 billionth app will receive from Apple a $10,000 gift card. But that's small beer compared to the payouts to app developers that Apple has made since starting the store. In April of this year, it announced that developers had received $9 billion, that's 5.9 billion sterling, since the App Store started, pointing to a gigantic new economy that can now make teenagers into millionaires and create entire new business giants. For all these stories and so much more, go to the best tech website on the web, guardian.co.uk/technology. Now, do you want to change the world through technology?
The Guardian Active Summit is returning to London on the 9th of July. Join hundreds of media and tech executives at this one-day event and discover how leading international companies are harnessing technology to change their business and the world. Speakers include Google, Ericsson, Raspberry Pi, and more. Plus, save 20% with the early bird offer when you book before Wednesday, 22nd of May. The Guardian Activate Summit. Visit guardian.co.uk/activate/London to find out more.
Moshi Monsters, as every parent will know, is a universal hit with kids. And yet the company behind Moshi Monsters, Mind Candy, was on the brink of closure in 2007 when it took a final punt on these colourful furry monsters and one big. Last week, they celebrated their fifth birthday. I went along to meet the man behind the monsters. I'm at Moshi Monsters HQ in Bond Hill Street, and I'm with Michael Acton Smith, who is generally regarded as the rock star of London's tech startup scene. You're not really a startup anymore. How do you feel on this, your fifth birthday?
It's pretty crazy. But I do feel like we're still a startup. I think we've still got a long, long way to go. I think a startup is more of a frame of mind than a size of business. And I still want us to stay scrappy and agile and entrepreneurial. And also to throw great parties, which I think startups do.
You were being mobbed by lots of kids earlier and having to sign autographs as Mr. Moshi. Is that a normal part of the day job?
No, definitely not a normal part. But when we do events like this, it happens a little bit. So we did something at Alton Towers the other day. We did something at Thorpe Park. And we had a golden ticket competition. And the winners got to come to our office. So, yeah, it's amazing meeting all the fans.
Now, Moshi is very well established in the playgrounds of the UK. There's probably not a parent listening to this that isn't aware of Moshi and hasn't been nagged into buying something at a checkout somewhere in the country. But you've been looking at the US recently. That's really a key market for you to move into. How's that going?
Still early days in the US. It's a big, tough market. We're looking to set up an office in San Francisco. I think we need more people in the ground over there. And I think we underestimated how complex a market it was. I'm confident that we'll crack it and it'll be as successful as it is in the UK, but we've got a way to go yet.
You've said before that taking a digital product into the physical world is something that you're kind of making up as you go along, and you've got a film on the cards. How's that going? When can we expect to see something?
So yeah, the film is a bit bizarre. I've always wanted to get into the movie industry. So this is a bit of a labour of love. And we've been working on it for about the last year. And it should be coming out before the holidays, the Christmas period this year.
You spoke recently about the revenues that you made in 2011 and how that flattened in 2012, which must have been something of a come down after the amazing kind of rise that you've had. Would you like to tell us about that?
Yeah, so the last published accounts we put out were 2011, and everything grew in 2012, so we had healthy growth, and we haven't published our numbers yet. So revenues and profits are all doing very well. What we have seen a dip in are the number of kids spending time at moshimonsters.com. And what's happening is this extraordinarily fast shift from desktop to touchscreen devices. If I'm honest, it caught us by surprise and a lot of other companies. So a lot of our energy now is building amazing, magical experiences on tablets and mobile.
But you haven't released a tablet app yet, have you?
There are two mobile experiences, games that we've got out there at the moment, but they're both quite light. And we've got several others in development at the moment. So our big ones are coming this year.
Okay, so quarter three, quarter four?
Hopefully quarter three.
Okay, the article I was referring to was in the FT where you talked about revenues.
Yeah.
and that things, because of kids and tablet use, revenues had just not carried on growing as they had in 2011. Is that not correct?
The revenue has grown year on year, and we saw a very healthy uptick from 2011 to 2012. But the dip, as I say, is in terms of MAU, monthly active users on our core desktop version of Moshi, which used to be the heart of the brand, and now the centre of gravity is changing to mobile.
Is there an element here that obviously your key audience is children, and that at some point they grow up? Are they growing up and moving into something else? Is that a worry for you?
Yeah, with a lot of kids' properties, kids love them and then they move on to other things. And we definitely want to avoid Moshi Monsters being a fad. 5 years is a lot longer than most kids' products last. I would love to build an evergreen, and I'd love my grandchildren to play it one day, you know, like a Lego or a Barbie or a Hot Wheels. So we're spending a lot of time making sure we keep it fresh and new and exciting, and I think we can do it.
Just going back to that uncharted territory about taking a digital brand into a physical space, you've done, pioneering work, I suppose, in developing brand extensions, which probably you couldn't even have imagined that would be as successful as they have been. So what sort of takeaways would you give to other companies looking to do something in this space, presumably companies that wouldn't compete with what you're doing?
I would advise all companies to stay away from anything remotely close to what we're doing. No, I think what's exciting at the moment is the entertainment industry. It's going through extraordinary flux at the moment. New devices, new platforms, new technologies. And in the old days, the heart of kids' properties used to be a TV show or a film, and everything was built around it. Nowadays, the heart is going to be touchscreen experiences, games. Look at Angry Birds, look at Fruit Ninja, look at Talking Tom, and hopefully soon Moshi Monsters. So all the new properties that we're developing will start as mobile and tablet games, and then once successful, expand from there.
A while back, I know you were looking at a TV series for Moshi.
Yeah.
Where down the road is that?
So we were very excited about the idea of building a kids' YouTube, Moshi TV. And we put something up, but it wasn't as great as we hoped it would be. We develop a lot of our cartoon content, so we create Moshi music videos that we put on YouTube. And we're keen to do more of that. So we haven't quite figured out our cartoon strategy, but I think to give the brand a lot of kind of longevity, that's an important thing we need to do.
And outside of Moshi...
Yeah.
You're very successful now. You've been around a very long time. You've got a very good kind of thermometer of what's going on in London and in the UK tech scene. What's really hot? What are you loving? What are you investing in that you can tell us about?
Well, I think London's amazing at the moment. There's this real energy and excitement around startups and tech businesses. Silicon Drinkabout is buzzing every Friday. Hundreds of people turn up. There's two products that I've invested in and I'm a little bit involved in at the moment. One is Calm.com, which I set up with my buddy Alex Chu. In this hectic, busy world of always-on tech, it's nice to kind of take a step back. And the other is the Daily Spank, which sounds bizarre, but my friend Malcolm Scoville set that up.
That doesn't sound entirely compatible with Moshi.
It is. It sounds a little unusual, but it's not. It's basically photo sharing made playful. So it's a bit like Instagram. Every day you get prompted to take a different photo, and the whole community takes the same photo with the same brief, and then everyone sees what everyone else has got up to, and it's very compelling and fun new app.
Share your homework.
Indeed, or share anything you discover exciting, and just gives a bit more focus to a photo sharing.
So 5 years, extremely long time in the dog years of internet world. Where are you going to be in another 5 years' time?
If I'm honest, I have no idea. You know, I love what I do. I love waking up every morning and working with all these creative people on exciting, colourful projects. I want to create new things. I want Moshi to continue growing, but got lots of new ideas that are bubbling away. And as I say, I think the entertainment industry is at such an amazing time.
And many thanks to Michael and the whole team at Mind Candy. If you have kids, you don't need to find Moshi Monsters because they will find you. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Remember, for breaking technology news day and night, just go to guardian.co.uk/tech. But from me, Jemima Kish, Tech Weekly producer Jason Phipps, and all the tech team, join us next Thursday. Bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.